Hello and welcome to the Leadership Hub, brought to you by Global Leadership Initiatives. GLI is a Canadian-based leadership development organization with over 22 world-class expert consultants who specialize in leadership, sustainability, management, coaching, and team development. GLI strives to create excellence in leadership globally by offering individuals and organizations holistic tools and programs that enable them to develop their leadership and their business capacity. For more information on our programs and services, visit www.globalleader.ca. Now, let's dive into today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this month's episode of the Leadership Hub. My name is Sarah, and I'm the COO and co-founder of GLI.
And my name is Megan. We're your hosts today and welcome you to join us as we engage in a conversation with our guest, Dr. Elizabeth Tulija, on cultural intelligence.
So we're going to be looking at what cultural intelligence is, why there's such a poor understanding of it when we live and we work in such a globalized business environment, and how we can promote cultural intelligence in ourselves and our organizations.
Dr. Elizabeth Tulija is an author, lecturer, associate certified coach, and founder of the Intercultural Leader Institute, which helps leaders successfully navigate today's multicultural workforce through online courses, coaching, and consulting. She's also GLI's subject expert on cultural intelligence and is going to help us as we dig deeper into defining cultural intelligence, looking at why it's so vital to the success of leaders and organizations, and why so many people, myself included, could use help developing it. Elizabeth, welcome to the podcast, and thank you for being with us today. To kick us off, could you give us a snapshot of your leadership journey and how you found your way to becoming an expert in cultural intelligence?
Thank you, Megan and Sarah, for a wonderful introduction. What's my leadership journey? Wow. It's been around 20 years since I started teaching in business schools across the globe. In the U.S., I was at the Wharton School and University of Notre Dame. In Asia, it was the Chinese University of Hong Kong and Sichuan University in Chengdu. I've also had the opportunity to work with leaders at companies like Morgan Stanley and Merrill Lynch, Whirlpool, U.S. State Department as a Fulbright scholar, and Panasonic Japan. It's been an amazing journey traveling throughout the world to learn from and work with leaders of different cultures. And I like to think of leadership like the dance of tango. I'm an avid ballroom dancer and had the opportunity to take tango lessons in Buenos Aires. Tango uses unpredictable rhythms, steps, and music shifts. Tango can be spirited and lively, but also intense and melancholy. It's because the leader chooses how and where to move according to the beat, while the follower has to be alert to the subtle movements and rhythmic nuances. It's a beautiful yet complicated type of dance that requires attention, concentration, intuition, and decision-making. Isn't this similar in the workplace where we try to get along with each other, whether leaders or followers? All too often, we feel like we're just clumsily stepping on someone else's toes. That's why we must develop CQ, cultural intelligence.
You know, I was raised in a very culturally and ethnically diverse environment, and like Elizabeth, had a very intense cultural curiosity. I mean, by the age of 19, I was certain that I was going to study international development and travel the world, fueled by my passion for discovering and understanding different cultures. And while I've been able to experience the richness of many cultures and do quite a bit of traveling over the years, I never did quite end up traveling the world like I thought I would, and instead took up a career in nursing and leadership. So Listening to Elizabeth's story brought back a wave of excitement, and I couldn't wait for us to unpack CQ and its implications to leadership. You know, we live and work in such a globalized society, an increasingly diverse organizational environment in which leaders have to consistently work across borders, navigate the nuances of culture. And CQ is not simply just acknowledging and being sensitive to different other cultures, it's far more holistic in its approach. And both Megan and I had trouble defining it. As I began to dig deeper into the research, I came across an article by the Harvard Business Review that defined CQ as the ability to make sense of unfamiliar contexts and then blend in. And it had three components to it. It had the cognitive, the physical, and the emotional slash motivational. And while it shares many of the properties of emotional intelligence, CQ goes one step further by equipping a person to distinguish behaviors produced by the culture in question from behaviors that are peculiar to particular individuals and those found in all human beings. So, given that we live in such a globalized society, cultural intelligence is vital to the success of organizations. But like so many, myself included, our understanding and application of cultural intelligence is often very limited to the notion that cultural intelligence means simply understanding another person's culture and how to communicate in a way that respects that.
You're so right, Sarah, that defining cultural intelligence, it really is such a difficult task. I know for me personally, my idea of cultural intelligence is mixed up with a lot of misconceptions and myths that I'm sure a lot of us hold. Since we have an expert in cultural intelligence with us today, Elizabeth, I'd love to hear your take on these myths and maybe see if we can debunk a couple of them for the audience today.
I like that you mentioned this classic definition. It points out the necessary skill development because we don't learn CQ through osmosis. Cultural intelligence means that we have to have self and other awareness. CQ is a person's ability to function skillfully in a cultural context different than one's own. And it means that a culturally intelligent person is someone who's able to empathize and work well with others while acknowledging different values, beliefs, attitudes, and behaviors. And when we develop and continue to develop CQ, it enables us to anticipate, act, and react appropriately, and then to reevaluate and shift our behaviors in the future. In a nutshell, CQ is being able to skillfully interact with others who are different from you.
The first really common myth that I often hear, and if I'm being totally honest, I've actually had thoughts like this myself, is that there are just so many different cultures to learn about. It can feel like a really daunting task to have adequate information about these cultures. So what would you say to someone who feels this way?
What makes this world amazing is the many different cultures and peoples and customs and traditions. While it's not possible to know everything, we can learn the basics of how a national culture, a society, a country is broken down. All societies respond to a number of limited universal problems, and these include how to deal with power, how we act individually or collectively, how we view achievement or cooperation, how people respond to time, whether physical, social, or environmental, how people deal with uncertainty, and how people indulge or restrict enjoyment in life. And these responses are based upon each society's values. With 8 billion people in our world spread out over 247 countries, territories, nation states, we know that cultures aren't restricted to borders. One area of a country could have many different communities and languages, all with their unique values, beliefs, and practices. Experts estimate that there are thousands and thousands and thousands of cultures in our world. While it's not possible to learn about every culture, we can pick out a few and read up on them and enjoy the curiosity and discovery that ensues. But we can learn about the value dimensions that I just described. And when we know something generally about how different societies value and believe and behave, then we can prepare for cultural interactions.
The second myth that I want to debunk is that if an organization has a diverse team, it automatically means that cultural intelligence is present. Because I think there's such a focus now on ensuring diversity factor. So there's like certain percentages in teams and hiring that we have to have of certain other ethnicities or cultures. And even in choosing teams, there's a big push on diversity. So what would you say, Elizabeth, to leaders who feel like they've done enough by just simply hiring a diverse team? Is that enough, or is there more that we need to do, that we can do, to really incorporate cultural intelligence?
Hiring talent from diverse backgrounds is not enough. Organizations today are trying to create more diversity within their workforce, and this is important. With this comes the pressure to ensure that individuals feel included and have a voice. In theory, this should be a given, but in reality, it's very complicated. With diversity comes the complexity of values, beliefs, attitudes, and behaviors, which can lead to misunderstanding, conflict, and distrust. What I'm seeing today are concerns about politics, religion, gender, age, ability, as well as race, ethnicity, and social issues that are at the forefront of all of our minds. Unfortunately, discord rather than harmony is created because people try to discuss issues from their perspective and others only become more defensive and polarized because they don't see it from the other person's perspective. What I'm also seeing is that many leaders today don't know what to do and how to get people engaged. Often their people feel named, blamed, and shamed, and don't want to participate in learning about cultural diversity. I've talked with leaders in many companies where at present there's a kind of standoff. Nothing is happening to move people forward. Everyone is stuck, afraid to move, afraid to make a mistake or take a misstep.
So the third myth is that once you've done a little digging and, you know, maybe changed a thought or two around multiculturalism, you're now competent enough to deal with any intercultural situation with ease. So can you help us understand why cultural intelligence isn't just a once-off event, but it's rather a lifetime commitment to growth?
That's a great question. You may have years of experience leading teams, gaining trust with clients, or advocating for diversity and inclusion within your organization. You're knowledgeable about the concepts and the importance of D&I, but still experience day-to-day misunderstandings that recur again and again with your staff, colleagues, clients, business partners, and vendors. But let's go back to the definition of CQ, cultural intelligence. It's the ability to make sense of unfamiliar contexts and then adapt them. We can understand CQ better as being made up of four factors that can help us bridge the divide that exists across cultural diversity. The first is motivation, to learn what is necessary for understanding differences. The second is knowledge. If we're motivated to learn, then we become curious to know more about both differences and similarities. The third is strategy. When we gather that cultural knowledge, we then figure out how to interact. We develop strategies for the next time something happens. And fourth is behavior. It's the ability to act appropriately in different contexts and situations based upon that motivation, knowledge, and strategy. Each factor builds upon the other, and it's ongoing. When we realize this, we become lifelong learners.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Elizabeth. Another myth that I wanted to kind of focus on that's incredibly common is that your own diversity, whether that be your ethnicity, your gender, the presence of a disability, or anything else, has taught you enough about being culturally sensitive. So that you don't need to go through any kind of training to be culturally competent. So if I'm a person, for example, I'm a female. By default of being female, does that make me culturally sensitive? Or by default of having a disability, does that make me culturally competent in understanding others with disability or other females? And can you help us understand why that's not the case, Elizabeth, and why it's really important to engage in ongoing training on CQ?
Another great question. We often think that as we gain experience in the world, we should be better at communicating and interacting effectively with people. While we do learn from interacting with others, we don't learn cultural competence simply through osmosis. And this surely applies to working domestically. If you think about all of the aspects of what make you unique, it's your individual cultural identity, your age, education, ethnicity, race, languages, social economic status, religion, politics, ability, disability, gender, your hobbies, your interests, your background, your family. How is it possible to understand the perspective of someone else without engaging in deep learning and understanding of the issues that matter to that person? We need to be able to first understand ourselves and then be able to extend that to understanding others.
This next myth is a tough one, but I know a lot of people feel that fostering diversity equals preferential treatment of the minority. And seeing as they're the minority, what's the point? So how would you go about addressing these concerns?
Yes, this myth is a tough one. We've all heard the saying, if you want to understand someone, you have to walk in their shoes. Every culture has a saying like this. Close your eyes for a moment, and I want you to imagine being on vacation. You're enjoying your time away in a different place. Think about walking into a small shop to look around at some interesting items. You're with two friends who are Filipino, and you're white. The owner ignores your friends, yet greets you and offers immediate service while all the time keeping an eye on your friends. If you've ever experienced the barriers that someone else has faced, it's hard to see it from their perspective. And this is an actual experience I've had with friends. Discrimination is a fact of life since the beginning of human civilization. It's so big, and it's so hard to deal with it. Often we don't deal with it because it is so big, but CQ is vital to our survival as human beings, and I strongly believe that each of us can do our own part to shift our perspectives and try to attempt to see something from somebody else's viewpoint, their worldview, and then empathize with their lived experience. This doesn't mean that we change our values or beliefs. It means that we shift our perspective to try and understand somebody else. And when we do this, we can make small improvements within our own circle of influence.
Now that we have a better picture of some of the common myths about cultural intelligence and some insights into the reality behind these myths, let's dive into why it's important for leaders and organizations to prioritize cultural intelligence.
For any international organization, the benefits of fostering CQ are very clear. Without a culture that invites multicultural participation, valuable contributions from diverse perspectives will be lost, which ultimately weakens the potential for powerful co-creation within an organization. And having workplaces with high cultural intelligence also results in higher feelings of satisfaction and belonging among employees. And quite frankly, who wouldn't want to be in a workplace where they feel valued, respected, and understood? I think all of us strive to find an environment where we are respected and we are valued. You know, Elizabeth, from your background in developing courses and training programs to foster CQ, what are some of the reasons you believe leaders and organizations need to be developing this?
Yes, this is really important. I like to use the example of a study by two Cornell psychologists called the Dunning-Kruger effect. Its theory states that people lack the self-awareness to accurately assess their skills, so they often wind up overestimating their knowledge or ability. For example, it's not uncommon to think you're smarter, kinder, or better at managing others than the average person. It's your perception that you're better at something than you really are. And we've heard the saying that our perceptions of reality are more important than reality itself. We all need to develop our CQ, our cultural competence to deal with differences. And when we do this, we can strengthen our leadership capabilities and we can build stronger organizations.
So a really encouraging truth that I keep coming back to is that cultural intelligence is not an innate skill. We often think of it that way, like you either have it or you don't. You're either culturally intelligent and navigate those situations really well or you don't. But I prefer to think of it as something that has to be developed through coaching, training, through dialogue like we're having today, and through a whole lot of patience. And it's pretty clear that we all need to be working on developing cultural intelligence in our lives and our places of work. But like any endeavor, I think awareness is the first step. So we really need to start trying to pay careful attention to our thoughts and actions whenever we're confronted with diversity in the workplace. Are they positive? Are they negative? Are they neutral? And how would we like to think and act differently in those situations, maybe? So Elizabeth, other than that first step of starting to generate awareness around our own levels of cultural intelligence, around our feelings when we interact with diverse cultures in the workplace, in our lives, what are some of the concrete steps that you recommend people take to begin developing their cultural intelligence?
Thank you so much, Megan. What I would say for everyone who's listening, use the four factors of CQ as a guide. I use them myself. We are all on this journey called life, and every day is a new opportunity for growth and development. My life has been changed, both personally and professionally, as I've developed over the years. And at the beginning, you asked, what was my leadership journey? My leadership journey has been just this, taking to heart these four factors of motivation, knowledge, strategy, and behavior, and infusing them into my life. I'm imperfect. I make mistakes all the time. And that's life. But if we use these four factors, each of us can grow and develop on our leadership journey. And that will, in effect, enrich and enhance what happens within our organization. So I would say, use these four factors of CQ. Motivation. Become curious about different cultures. And befriend a colleague at work or a neighbor down the street. Knowledge. Ask questions of your new friend and learn from them. You can also read books, watch movies, and the next time you travel, whether it's in country or across borders, learn about the history and people of that area. Include your kids. Strategy. Notice your attitude, your reactions, your behaviors when you talk about world events, or even when listening to someone with a very different political view. Think about how you can really hear them and try to understand their worldview on their terms, not on yours. And finally, behavior. As you become motivated, build knowledge and strategize, check your attitudes. You can then find different ways to approach and react to situations and contexts. We all are on this journey called life, and we all need to develop our CQ, our cultural intelligence, which makes us culturally competent. Because we share this world with 8 billion people, we have many differences, yet we have many commonalities, and we can learn to understand each other better and have better outcomes.
Dr. Talija, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and taking the time to go through CQ with us and providing us with some incredible insights on the topic and why we need it, how to develop it. It's been fantastic having you on today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Sarah, Megan, thanks so much for having me talk about developing CQ. I do believe that with cultural competence, we can change the world, one person at a time, starting with ourselves.
If you would like more resources on cultural intelligence, head to the podcast notes where we have linked articles by Dr. Talija as well as useful graphics from our discussion today. To find out more about Elizabeth and what she does, you can visit www.theinterculturalleader.com, where you can also get your hands on a 20% discount on her latest book, Intercultural Communication for Global Leadership, How Leaders Communicate.